Hello, everybody. I think we might get started. We've only got 40 minutes, and there's two discrete presentations and a reasonable amount of material to get through. And Chris Katulis is going to go first with the New South Wales Workers' Compensation Scheme update, followed by Bruce Watson for the Comcare scheme. Quick bio with Chris. He joined WorkCover in mid-2005, worked in various management roles since then, particularly in relation to implementing and managing the normal insurer contracts with scheme agents and overseeing the self and specialised insurer licensing arrangements. His current title is Director of Product Development and Support for the Workers' Comp Insurance Division, and most recently, I guess not surprisingly, has been focused on implementing the 2012 reforms and associated performance improvements and monitoring. With that, over to you, Chris.
Thanks, Adrian. Good morning, everyone. A lot has happened in the New South Wales scheme since the last conference, and I guess over the last 18 months to 2 years, we've witnessed lots of change, different behaviours and experiences that we haven't seen in a long time, if at all. And I guess that's much like the retro gala dinner we went to last night. But ultimately this morning, what I'd like to do is just briefly walk you through our reform pathway, highlighting, I guess, some of the milestone dates in the reforms that we've implemented from June 2012 last year. At the session before this, there was quite a bit of discussion around the reforms and the nature of the reforms, so I won't go into the detail behind the individual pieces of the legislation. But in going through the pathway, we'll also highlight some of the scheme results along the way up to the latest results at June 2013. I think also we'll answer some questions around to what extent we've allowed for the reforms in the scheme results and the valuation performance. We're also wanting to have a look at what are the drivers of scheme performance and what's informed the claims experience over the last 12 months. I also want to highlight some of the outcomes that we're starting to see and some of the strategies and reforms we're starting to introduce in parallel as a consequence of the reforms, but also as part of the reforms, and what outcomes we've delivered to workers and employers in New South Wales. And then finally, I guess, what are some of the remaining risks and uncertainties that lie ahead with our scheme going forward? If we look at the reform pathway, it's no secret that in December 2011, we had a deficit of $4.1 billion. So the actual environment was very compelling, and the appetite for reform was quite, pressing. We had a funding ratio of 78%. New South Wales employers were facing a premium increase of about 28%, and we were already 20 to 60% higher in our premium rates compared to some of the other jurisdictions in Australia. If we look at the reform pathway, on the 19th of June 2012, that's when it all began. We started to implement some of the reforms at that particular date around journey claims, heart attack and stroke, nervous shock, disease injuries, and some of the thresholds to permanent impairment that was introduced at that particular point. Our June valuation, it improved our financial position, surprisingly, as a result of the reforms, but not entirely. Our claims experience was improving at that particular point, but I guess more importantly, our investment returns at that particular point in time informed some of the improvements, and we saw an improvement of about $2.6 billion in the liabilities at that point in time. On the 17th of September, we started to implement the reforms as they apply to our most seriously injured workers. They're the ones who had a whole person impairment assessment of over 30%. We transitioned about 940 across the system, approximately about 850 were in the scheme. And 70% of those claimants saw an increase in their actual benefits at that particular point in time. On the 1st of October 2012 is when we started to commence the new reforms for new claims that were made from the 1st of October, and that relates to the new way of calculating their weekly benefits based on pre-injury average weekly earnings, and then a couple of caps and step-downs introduced from that point on those new claims. In December, we had a valuation. Further improvements were noted. We had a further improvement of about $600 million in our liabilities. Our deficit reduced to just over $800 million, and our funding ratio improved to 95%. So we still weren't solvent, but we were on a pathway of improvement. From the 1st of January 2013, a big effort in terms of transition all our pre-existing claims, which I guess had that were made prior to the 1st of October 2012, and mostly around bringing them under the new requirements for work capacity assessments, and also to transition our medical-only claims at that particular point. Brings us to our current results. We're solvent. We finally made it at our June 2013 valuation. We're currently in surplus at just over $300 million and our funding ratio has tipped over into 102%. So I guess what does that mean and what's the message that we can take away? I guess our performance is starting to reflect and deliver on the intent of the reforms. If we have a look at what we were intending with the reforms, we want to restore sustainability to the New South Wales WorkCover scheme. We'll talk about sustainability a bit later on. And whether or not we can say that it is. But certainly what we wanted to do was promote return to work, capacity for work, focus more around capacity for work rather than incapacity, and start to see, you know, some changes in claimant behaviour and in what we're doing, and I guess ensure that our most seriously injured are receiving benefits and the appropriate support for their injuries, whereas our less seriously injured workers who have the capacity for work are provided all the support and rehab they need to be able to return back to employment. So what does that mean? We had an improvement of just $1.2 billion in the last 6 months from the December 2012 valuation, an improvement of 7% in our funding ratio, and our target collection rates are 1.55%. They were previously 1.68, so we've had a reduction of 0.13. And not wanting to sing the praises, but we're finally solvent. First time in 5 years that we've seen that position. I guess from our perspective, you know, to what extent has the valuation result allowed for the impact of the reforms? I think it's important to note that only some, not the full, allowance of the benefit reforms have been made. I guess when we look at the evaluation approach with the actuary, it only allows for the impact of the reforms as it's reflected in the emerging claims experience. I'll talk a little bit about what that means and what we've seen so far, but also where there is some reasonable certainty as to those impacts on the future claims costs, and that's what's been taken into account. We have very limited experience in a post-reform environment, and that's particularly in respect of work capacity. It's new to New South Wales, and it's only really taken effect in terms of the transition of our existing claims, but we only started transitioning from the 1st of January and really only started from the 1st of March in particular under our plan, and we're still going. And if we're talking about a June valuation, we didn't have much experience at that particular point in time. But also, we don't really know what the step-downs and the caps are going to introduce and what some of the thresholds around the whole person impairment will create. And so, in conclusion, the full financial impact of the reforms is still uncertain, and it will take a number of years to know what the true impact will be. Okay, so what have been some of the key drivers of scheme performance that resulted in our June results? If we look at the emerging claims experience, and we might have touched on this in the previous session with PwC and our general manager, Gary Jeffrey, what we've seen is that the number of claims receiving weekly benefits has reduced by 18% over the last 18 months, and if we look at the last 6 months, they've actually reduced by 10%. This experience applies across all claims for all accident periods and across all whole person impairment bands as well. So I think it was a question that was asked in the last session, so we've answered it here as well. Almost all of the reduction has occurred prior to claims actually undergoing a work capacity assessment and also prior to transition to the new benefits regime under the reforms. So we've seen quite a bit of activity through other initiatives and other strategies in respect of those particular claims. And that being said, we've actually seen, and you know, despite a reduction in the claims numbers, we've actually seen an increase in the average payment size. So if you look at what's been happening there, we're probably seeing our severely injured workers getting more benefits, and also with the weeklies now being calculated on pre-injury average earnings for new claims, it's demonstrating that it's actually providing workers more benefits. We talked about the number of claims reported. We've seen a reduction in the total number of claims reported, approximately about just over 20%. It is partly attributed to the elimination of journeying claims when they're not related to work. But that's only roughly around 8%. So we've got a further 15% that's attributed to other types of claimant behaviours, which I guess we've yet to pin down and define. But certainly we know that there is something going on and there is a change in the environment. In terms of weekly benefits, the impact on the liabilities, we've seen a reduction of around just over $500 million. Again, it's attributed to the lower number of active weekly claims, and it's a reduction in the number of claimants on weekly benefits in the last 6 months. But it's also taking account for the fact that we have higher average weekly payments per claim. Our medical benefits, we've seen some improvement in that area as well. There's been a reduction of $92 million, and it's been extremely favourable in the last 6 months. And then we've seen some further reductions in other benefit types. So our rehabilitation has reduced by $72 million, as well as our investigation by just over $90 million. And again, these are all attributed to the reduction in our open and active claims. But for rehab and for investigation, we've also seen a higher average cost on a per claim basis in these particular areas. And that's not surprising given that our reforms are focused on capacity for work. So we'd want to see that our workers are getting the support they need. I guess what has resulted in an increase in our claims liabilities to balance things out, I guess in terms of our lump sum payments, we've had a particular case, Goodapple. It overturned the retrospective application of our access to whole person impairment and pain and suffering lump sum payments for our claims pre the 19th of June. So what that meant was that we'd had to increase our liabilities again by just under $400 million in that particular aspect, but I guess the increase is more than offset by the reduction in claims liabilities from those previous points. And in terms of weekly benefits, we just had a change in the indexation approach to the labour price index for future weekly benefits for those existing claimants. And that's just to be consistent with the legislation, so that increased our claims liabilities by $260 million. What are some of the other influences of, I guess, our June results? We've had great investment returns. They improved over the last 6 months, and that improvement translated to just over $400 million. And there was an increase in our risk-free discount rate, and that reduced our outstanding claims liabilities by $142 million. So how have we used these reforms and how are they translating to outcomes across the scheme? If we look at our claims outcomes, our return to work rate has improved by 3% to 88% in the last survey by Safe Work Australia in the National Return to Work Survey. Our results are higher than the national average, and in terms of our durable return to work rate, it's the equal highest at 80% across Australia. Also, our own internal return to work duration measures at the 26, 52 and 104 week that we measure our performance, it's the best they've been in the last 3 years. We've seen improvements by up to 2 days in average duration on our measures. And they're not only just attributed to the reforms, it's also attributed to many factors. We've had quite a few strategies. We've had a specific sort of front-end strategy for our scheme agents. We've revised our remuneration models in the 2011-2012 periods, and so that's created some more focus for our scheme agents on our front end, and that's contributed to our return to work outcomes. We've also had some strategies around rehabilitation and early intervention to assist in that. We've had some employer incentives as well, focused around the claims area, trying to create and promote greater accountability of employers on their claims outcomes. We introduced a return to work assist programs for what we're terming micro-employers with less than 5 staff and who have a base tariff premium of less than $30,000. And what that program allows these employers to access funding for work trials for their injured workers, so that we provide funding for 6 weeks in the first 13 weeks of a claim of their injured workers, and it allows them the opportunity to return to work in any type of duties. And so those employers can still, find a replacement or a casual or overtime to allow their pre-injury duties to be fulfilled, but also to bring their injured workers back to work in some capacity. We also introduced a 10% return to work incentive for small employers who achieve return to work outcomes in 13 weeks. That's directly linked to their premium amount. So if they have an injured worker and they're able to get them back to work, they can receive a 10% return to work incentive on their premium. And I guess what these incentives show is that we're pretty much honouring the intent of the reform. So what we're trying to do is we're still trying to maintain that focus on capacity for work. So in introducing some employer incentives, we want to link it back to the intent of the reforms around focusing on early return to work and recovery at work for their workers' injuries. In terms of the implementation of reforms, I mentioned earlier our most seriously injured workers are receiving 70% more in benefits. We're focusing on capacity for work for less seriously injured workers, and this is a cultural impact. So we're undertaking a lot of strategies around trying to change the culture, and it's likely influencing some of our claimant behaviours that's translating back into our weekly experience. And other claims initiatives, we had a return to work engagement with workplaces program. What that involved was an integrated engagement approach in identifying immediate return to work opportunities for a mixture of large, medium and small employers, where we identified through data analysis and through their claims experience that they actually did have workers who had the capacity to work, but they hadn't returned back to work. And that was quite a successful program, and we're looking at taking it from a pilot into something a bit more longer term and reaching more employers across those three bands, across more industries. We expanded our vocational assistance programs in terms of the level of subsidies available to employers, and we've actually seen an 88% increase in utilisation for those initiatives. And in the scheme, we have specialist case managers that we fund for our severe or serious injury and our work injury damages claims to ensure that we get a consistent and effective and intensive case management approach for these particular claims. In the underwriting space, we've announced a number of premium reductions. We've had two in the last couple of months, averaging up to a 12.5% rate reduction for the 2013 premium cycle. The only difference with these reductions compared to historically in New South Wales is that these reductions were performance-based, so they were limited to those employers across New South Wales who actually demonstrated an improved performance in their claims experience. What this meant was that it returned about $330 million collectively to New South Wales business. Up to 200,000 employers are benefiting from these reductions. And as I mentioned before, without the reforms, we wouldn't have been able to introduce these reductions, and premiums may have increased by up to 28%. We had a number of incentives for our small employers, and I guess we're terming these some of the quick wins that we were able to introduce from June onwards. And we're hoping to replicate these into the larger employer bands. So we're sort of currently working on some medium employer initiatives and large employer initiatives. But what we have implemented are some small employer incentives. We had an employer safety incentive premium discount of 10% for small employers. The discount is removed if a claim is made and a worker isn't returned to suitable work within 4 weeks of injury. I mentioned before a return to work incentive for return to work outcomes within 13 weeks. And we've also increased the discount of 5% for premium paid in full by these small employers. And I guess what that does is it facilitates the early collection of premium in full, and it reduces the debt write-off. And we've also had some red tape reductions for small employers, so it gives them the ability to, be able to operate without having a large administrative burden. I guess what are our risks and uncertainties going forward in respect of the potential impact on reforms? Work capacity assessments, the effectiveness of these is unclear. It's untested. We've had limited experience. Our transition approach to our existing claims, it was an opportunity for us to build capability and capacity in work capacity decision making. I guess we haven't really seen what the real experience is. As I've mentioned before, most claims that ceased receiving workly benefits were not due to the fact that they went through a work capacity assessment, and as a result, very little, if no allowance was made in the valuation for this. Work injury damages is an ongoing risk and uncertainty for our scheme. We've seen an increased utilisation in recent years, which has been recognised from previous valuations. The actual reforms didn't touch upon work injury damages and aren't directly impacted by them. But what we're seeing is that our scheme liabilities are now reflective of 18% of the scheme liabilities are reflective of work injury damages, and it's still increasing. However, our experience at June 2013 has been in line with what was expected from previous valuations. I mentioned thresholds in WPI. We don't really know what impact that's going to have going forward. We have observed some slippage prior to the reforms, and we don't know how it's going to impact experience going forward. So we're going to keep an eye on whether or not they're going to remain stable going forward. I guess on our last slide, to what extent are the reforms and I guess some of the results to our valuation sustainable? I guess a key underlying intent of the reforms was to create a sustainable scheme, and I guess the key question for us is the experience described and, you know, the results sustainable going forward into the future? I guess our projections of our, you know, scheme solvency trajectory, when we have a look at what we can attempt to expect, I guess, based on alternative scenarios for claims management and investment rates. And I guess these are scenarios, look at a better case scenario, a worst case scenario, or a base scenario, assuming that everything stays stagnant. So if you have a look here on the right-hand side of that graph, the bolded green line is basically the base scenario, assuming everything stays the same. The dotted line above that is, I guess, an improvement in claims experience, so things go better than we expect. And I guess the dashed line underneath is things go worse than we expect. I think what you can see is that, you know, if we're talking about a solvency position or full funding at 100%, either way, I think it looks like we're still okay. But I think, as most of you know, and I think there's a lot of actuaries in the room, this can change very quickly, depending on what happens. But I guess from at this particular point in time and within a range of possible experience and assuming no change, the funding position of the scheme is expected to continue into the future. That's it.
Thanks very much, Chris. If you thank Chris briefly and Mark. While Bruce is setting up his presentation, I'll just introduce him very quickly. I think most of you know him already. Bruce became Comcare's chief actuary in 2010 after many years as the consulting actuary with Affinity. He's been attending accident comp seminars since the mid-1990s and presented numerous papers on various workers' comp issues during that time. Bruce.
All right. Thanks very much, Adrian. For those of you who don't recognise me, this might help. look, I've just got seven slides and I'll try and speak to about 2 minutes for each, and hopefully we'll get a couple of questions at the end. I've actually got to run straight off and chair a session in another room straight after this, so I won't be able to stick around, but there's a couple of people I see in the room who'll be able to answer the really difficult questions, and I'll be around for the rest of the seminar as well. So if I'm talking about the Comcare scheme, just it's worth having a look at what we mean by the Comcare scheme, because it means different things to different people. This is just looking at our scheme through the lens of our legislation. The enabling legislation, our authorising environment, is pretty complicated. There's four different acts there and they intersect in different ways. All up about 500,000 Australian workers are actually covered by our scheme in one way or another. Some of them, like the Defence Forces, are only for work health and safety regulation. Some, like the ACT government employees, are only for compensation that we manage. Then we've got the people in the federal government who come fully under our jurisdiction, our insured scheme. We've got the self-insurers, which is about 160,000. So it's a fairly complicated world we live in, and that doesn't even touch on the Seacare scheme, which is another part of our world. So when we talk about Comcare scheme, it does mean different things. So just try and be careful to be clear about what it is that I'm actually talking about at any time during the presentation today. This presentation is available to, I'm not sure if it's actually up on the website now, but it will be available, so you don't need to take any notes or copy anything down. So, in the spirit of balancing outcomes, here's my balance to Chris's presentation. Just absorb that for a minute. So that's the experience of our insured scheme. So this is the compensation scheme for the Commonwealth and ACT government employees over the past few years. So at 30th of June 2010, and for the sort of 15 or so years preceding that, we were fully funded. That's measured against a 75% probability of sufficiency reserve. So we were fully funded. What happened then? I joined. It's been downhill ever since. And you can sort of see the impact of the liability dropping down and the sort of fairly rapid response in premium rates that we've seen since then. So I think that picture tells a story. So what happened? What did cause that reduction? Probably four key things I'd point to over the past couple of years of what's caused the liabilities the funding position to change. One of them was an actuarial revaluation. So our actuaries have been our actuaries for some time, and I should declare that Adrian, sitting at the chair table, is currently our actuary, as is Peter Mulquinney. They took a look at our continuance rates for the long tail claims, and looking at experience of probably a good 10 years or so, said, look, those trends are unfavourable. We're sort of lagging in the response, and made a one-off change in the continuance rates for the tail. And as everybody would well know, a scheme like ours, which provides essentially a pension scheme to age 65, that can have a pretty significant impact on liabilities and on the premium rate. So that was one big impact that hit between 2011 and 2012. Overdue. I mean, with the benefit of hindsight, it was overdue and basically says that that our funding ratio really wasn't quite as good as it had appeared to be for several years before that. Another thing was the market interest rates. So the fall in interest rates hit us. We a long tail, our mean term's about 8 or 9 years, and we're short in terms of investment. We're basically invested in cash. So the impact of the reduction, and that's a legislative restriction, the impact of the reduction in discount rates hit the liabilities with no offset on the asset side at all. We also had quite genuine deterioration in our return to work outcomes at the short end, and I'll come on to that in my next slide. And the fourth one, which is probably more of an impact on premium than on liabilities, is to do with the impact of psychological injury claims, mental harm claims. So that's been a prevalent thing in our scheme for a while. The trends have been sort of stable to upwards for a time. What happened back in 2007 with some legislative reforms was maybe an initial sort of honeymoon effect or a change in behaviour and an expectation that that would be lasting. And so the liability valuation and the premiums actually responded to probably a better scenario than has actually unfolded. And so with the benefit of hindsight, those changes didn't really remove some of the psychological claims as much as some people might have thought at the time. And so some of that response has actually been, again, a bit of delayed recognition of the reality rather than necessarily an underlying deterioration of what's really going on. So that's the picture. And just to drill down on that third point about increasing time off work. So just a quick explanation, just taking a measure. I think David Gifford mentioned a similar sort of measure yesterday. If we just take every injury year and we look at it a year after the injury year and count the number of weeks that we've compensated for incapacity benefits, for weekly comp, during that time, the average per claim. So taking three large injury groups, so physical injuries, non-psychological diseases and psychological diseases, obviously the relativities are different, as psychological claims on average have much longer time off work, but across all three of those types of injuries we've seen about a 20% increase over a period of about 3 years in the average time off work. That's the sort of, you know, our burning platform. That's why we're continuing to see pressure on our liabilities and on our premium rates, and in terms of scheme outcomes, that this is the critical outcome for a workers' compensation scheme, is getting people back to work, and we're not really achieving that as well as we could be at the moment. So I'll go on to the SRC Act review. Paul put up a photo yesterday of Peter Hanks. I better thought I'd balance that with a photo of Alan Hawke, and that is Alan, it's not David Bowen, standing in front of the big house. So just give you a second, just a quick read of that. So the report was commissioned in 2012, was completed, delivered early 2013, and you can see there's some of the things that we see that have taken out as being the key recommendations and messages from that reform. Really all about, and in light of that performance experience, a real focus on better early intervention, better rehabilitation, better engagement of the employers in the process of return to work and rehabilitation. They were the things that were particularly called out in the recommendations that Dr. Hawke and Mr. Hanks gave us. Is that me?
No.
Oh, okay. Where that stands at the moment, we've had a change of government. There's been no legislative change actually announced in response to that, so the recommendations sit as part of a... Phone's doing something. And so that remains a matter of, for the new government to respond to those recommendations. In the meantime, we as ComCare and the employers can actually implement a number of the recommendations and ideas that are there. We don't actually have to wait for enabling legislation to do that, and we are working on a number of things. There was also a review of the SeaCare legislation as well, which is probably beyond a number of people's notice, but that also went through a significant review, and there's a report on that as well. In terms of our regulatory work, so our major focus there continues to be around preventing psychological harm in the workplace, promoting the health benefits of work. That's the upstream movement. So a number of people have spoken about that. Paul certainly spoke about that yesterday morning. So while it's still important, and always will be important for a regulator to have the reactive work, you know, when the whistle blows, to run to the incident, that's a critical part of that function. We've been on a very, very deliberate move for the last few years to move the regulatory work upstream and to be at the sort of prevention and the promotion of health to actually stop the harm occurring in the first place. Just a couple of examples there that I referred to about designing national guidelines around bullying and harassment in the workplace. This particular publication about promoting mental health, which we did together with the Public Service Commission. So it's a great resource. We've been sharing that around all over the place. Private sector companies, life insurers have picked up on that and found some really good tools in there. The point about systems improvement, that's something that's worked very well for us in our regulation of the self-insurers, is to have a very systems-based process of testing and auditing and improving capability of the systems levels that the employers have around prevention and rehabilitation. We haven't done that very well in the insured part of the scheme, so over the past couple of years we've been pushing harder into that to actually use some of the regulatory tools to try and both test and improve the systems. And in rehabilitation we've seen that the base standard in the government agencies is considerably lower than it has been in the self-insurers, and so we see that's another way of trying to tackle that rehabilitation problem. And the last point, certainly in the middle of this year, there was a pretty significant perversion of our regulatory effort to deal with issues of asbestos in telecommunications pits. I won't talk any more about that, but that's kind of it was an interesting experience that issue came up with the NBN rollout, and certainly soaked up a lot of our attention and resources for quite a good few months. A little bit of self-insurance, so that's another part of our scheme in the middle there. So there's about 160,000 or so workers that are under our legislation for workers' compensation and compensation, but who self-insure. There's 30 companies there that make up those numbers across a range of industries. One of the findings of the review that was done by Hanks and Hawke, one of the observations, was a significant performance differential between the self-insurers and the government agencies in our scheme, particularly in relation to return to work and rehabilitation outcomes. One of the recommendations then that Dr. Hawke made was to actually increase access to self-insurance. He actually framed it as a logical flow. I mean, the performance differential is so great, why wouldn't you actually encourage more people to be in the system? And so there were some specific recommendations that have been made to government about lifting the moratorium and broadening the tests of to allow companies into the scheme, also noting that we've got a pretty robust regulatory framework to oversight the companies once they're in. And finally, I'll get this really quickly. Common law asbestos. So that was back on my diagram. That was a little box up at the top right-hand side. That's another one of our bits of enabling legislation, is that we're responsible for the essentially any compensation for asbestos-related disease in the Commonwealth, and that's not just workers, that's public liability-type claims. There's a number of people who come into that under that legislation. We compensate roughly 100 claims a year there, and that experience has been pretty stable. The net liabilities are a bit short of $1 billion, including risk margins, so it's a pretty significant number. We've probably all up, if you count that in our workers' comp schemes, there's about $4 billion worth of liabilities on our balance sheet, so it's pretty big, some big numbers there. One of the things, the sort of improvements we've made in getting better outcomes there over the last couple of years is what we refer to as our guided choice model. So a number of people who have an asbestos-related disease have potential coverage under both the Common Law and under the Statutory Act, under the SRC Act, and it's been quite a maze for people to work out how to get through that and what's the best choice for those. So we've actually quite proactively set up a model for people with an asbestos disease to actually be guided by almost a pathways as to how they can get through and what the options are and which ones might actually work best for them. And that's kind of a real improvement about, simple process improvement, about just getting better outcomes for people. So that's it. That's the ComCare scheme update, which leaves us about 5 minutes for questions for Chris.
Thanks very much. Well, if I can make the usual request that anyone with questions, please can you use the microphone and state your name, and in this case, you better say who you're directing the question to. I think we're taking long on either scheme.
Alan Clayton, question for Chris. In your 10% incentive for small employers to achieve return to work within 13 weeks, are there any conditions on that? Because it seems to me that, in fact, it soaks up a lot of people who return to work, well within, with relatively, have an injury, short time off work, back at work. Do they qualify for the 10% discount?
They get the 10% automatically, on renewal. And then I guess when there is a claims experience, I guess what it does is it just creates the awareness that an early return to work and recovery at work concept, which underpins the intent of the reforms, just allows us to stay a lot more connected. And what it does is that generally with small employers anyway, they very rarely will see a claim. But when they do, they kind of don't really know what to do as a result. So that lack of awareness about how it sort of impacts on their business, until it actually happens, they don't have that understanding. So by building it into the actual premium calculation up front and in the communication when they are renewing their policies, it becomes front of mind. And so the fact that you want to influence behaviours, just by providing a blanket premium reduction, you don't do that, you can't achieve that. But by linking incentives in there, it builds that accountability and that allows them to stay connected to their claim.
So does that give them an incentive to have a claim?
No. Because, I guess in the end, small employers, they're going to want to carry on with their business. I can't imagine that providing a safety incentive, there is a safety incentive built into it as well. So what it does is it ensures that they're conscious of their workplace environment. And so they lose that incentive if there is a claim, so not particularly on that basis. So they're linked, they're interlinked, so they get an upfront incentive for safety, but then they lose it, they get back, if they get the worker back to work within their own
ways. Any other questions?
Sam Fuller from Tanner Fry. I had a question, sort of two related questions about pretty much every scheme update that comes for every 2 years focuses on two things. One is solvency of the scheme, and the other is premium rates. The question is there too much focus on that in the short term, particularly given discount rates and the different approaches that can be taken for that? The second question related to that is, at what point do you decide your solvency ratio is so low that you have to have drastic changes like this at last?
Thanks, Bart. Look, I think what happened is that the reforms came at a time when, I guess, WorkCover and maybe the government didn't really have a plan or a strategy around the long-term manageability of claims costs. What occurred is that, normally you would have a strategy in place that would sort of try to maintain the balance, and we got to a point where the balance of what we were paying in benefits compared to what we were charging employees for premiums. They got out of balance quite severely. There was no real strategic approach to the long-term manageability of claims costs. The reforms, you know, the deficit and the point that we got to made it very compelling to do that.
Can I just add to that? New South Wales was in the position whereby we were facing losing business and employment opportunities to Victoria and Queensland because we weren't competitive with the premiums as a result of the deficit. So the government was in a position where they had to do something to address the solvency of the system.
Perhaps a final comment from Bruce and then we better wrap it up. I'm not quite sure. Has it been on or not, that mic?
Oh, is it on?
Yeah. Right, is that on? Thanks, Sam. The second part of your question, what's the tipping point? Don't know. We'd like to think that we're on a path to actually recover without having to have the drastic legislative intervention. The first part, the message I continually give to people inside and outside our scheme is that the solvency ratio, the premium rates, they're actually just performance measures. They're just actually what happens if you... You know, if you count weeks off work and getting people back to work, it's what we're about. And if that goes well, then those measures improve. If that goes badly, those measures go in the wrong direction. It's nothing different. It's just a way of trying to capture and highlight what we do.
Thanks, Bruce. Thanks, Chris. Could we just a quick round of applause for our speakers?